This is NASCAR driver Tony Breininger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Gravity had a good run, but it's time to feel the weightlessness of the Brooks Glycerin 21. These running shoes feature nitrogen-infused DNA Loft V3 cushioning. Brooks has even magnified the plushness to elevate the softness to new levels. And if you want extra support, find these same features in the Brooks Glycerin GTS 21. Learn more and shop now at brooksrunning.com. That's brooksrunning.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Old favorites dominated the Emmys on Monday. Modern Family took Outstanding Comedy for the fifth year in a row. Julia Louis-Dreyfus with Outstanding Lead Actress in Veep, Breaking Bad, Outstanding Drama. Netflix took home nothing. But we're heading into the fall premiere season now, and new shows are rolling in. Blackish, How to Get Away with Murder, Gotham. Diversity is big this fall, critics say. And what else? This hour on Point, where television goes now, this fall. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you tracking the newbies in the fall lineup? What do you need now from TV? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Monday night, Julia Louis-Dreyfus accepting the award here for lead actress in the comedy series, recovering from a big impromptu kiss with Breaking Bad's Bryan Cranston, went up to thank HBO specifically. And speaking of Veep, she noted the depth of television writing these days.
But I have to say, this show is very dense, as you might notice, and it's a huge labor of love. And every labor of love takes a lot of labor. So a lot of labor, this one particularly. So I really want to thank everybody on the show for having such extraordinary grace under pressure and for having so much fun. Thank you, and thank you.
And here's Bryan Cranston receiving his Emmy for Lead Actor in a Drama Series for his performance as Walter White in AMC's Breaking Bad.
I'd like to dedicate this award to all the sneaky Petes of the world who thought that maybe settling for mediocrity was a good idea because it was safe. Don't do it. Take a chance. Take a risk.
So what next in the fall season? Lots of lauding of older shows there. With us from New York, Willa Paskin, TV critic at Slate. Willa, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And from Seattle, Melanie McFarlane joins us. She's TV editor at IMDb, the big online entertainment site. Melanie, thanks for being here.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So plenty of prizes, a big kiss, all the rest, but the headlines the next day. Emmys so boring. Status quo Emmys. Groundhog night at the Emmys. BuzzFeed says Emmys hate the future. What do you make of the lineup of winners, Willa?
Well, you know, the thing about TV is that there is this real bifurcation between the shows that a lot of people watch and the shows that are critically acclaimed and that, you know, very invested viewers watch. And sometimes you see that, you know, you see that play out in the size of shows' audiences all the time. You know, the fact that a show like NCIS has this huge audience but sort of no critical attention, and the fact that a show like Girls, you know, less than a million people watch it but people are writing about it all the time. So something like the Emmys, you know, it's not quite as stark, but Modern Family, for example, is this huge hit show that is beloved by a lot of Emmy voters, but it's not at this point hugely critically acclaimed, and people are a little bored of it. The people who, you know, write and think about TV more maybe than the people who watch it. And so that's what happened, is that these sort of shows, a bunch of people who have won before won again because they're the people that Emmy voters like. And for those of us watching at home, or at least those of us writing about it while watching at home, that seems pretty dull.
Melanie, what does it mean? Is Emmy voters like them? That means Emmys go for audience size?
Well, I think that Emmy goes for the votes that they've made before, frankly. If Emmy went for audience size, then Mad Men, I don't think, would have won.
Yeah.
In previous seasons. Now, it's been a while. But, you know, you have something like Breaking Bad winning. That's a highly acclaimed show. It had higher ratings toward the end of its run. But in terms of large, again, to echo what Willis said, when you're looking at something like a comedy, you know, Modern Family is a pretty solid shoe-in for getting votes. Now, if you were going by size, Big Bang Theory would have won. But I think that Modern Family is one of those shows that kind of hits all the nice little Emmy ticks. You have a lot of an ensemble cast with a number of nominees. It's won, like I said, five times in a row. There is a bit of I would say there's a bit of diversity in the cast, just in terms of subject matter, if nothing else. Like I said, it's a very relatable show. So in terms of that winning, it's a lot of it's a much safer choice than, say, Orange is the New Black. And then in terms of Veep, a lot of people haven't seen Veep. Then again, there was a year where Arrested Development won Best Comedy, and a lot of people didn't see that show. In fact, its creator actually asked people to watch it.
So here we come on a new season, and I'm not even sure what a new season means anymore. New shows seem to me like they're being introduced all the time, but fall season, I guess, is still the biggest premiere season here. Willa, do you see a turn in the flavor, the style, the feel of the new offerings?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you said that shows are coming out all the time this year. So we arrive in September, and the networks specifically do this thing they've been doing now forever, basically, which is they trot out all of these new series. And I think in the last couple years have shown, just sort of as ratings have kind of gone down and there's just more and more places to watch TV and it's not necessarily on the network, that this might be a little bit of a self-defeating strategy. On the one hand, it's a big event. You know, we're here, we're talking about it. There's all these ads for everything. We all know TV's starting again in September. On the other hand, because people find their shows now so many different ways and at so many different times, and there's no reason to watch it when the network wants you to watch it, it's this inundation of information and TV when, you know, not many people have time to watch 20 new shows in 2 weeks. So we're here, and it's kind of exciting. It's like Christmas morning, but also maybe it's with presents you don't want. So I think the thing about this season is there's a bunch of new shows. It's not I always feel like such a Grinch to keep the Christmas theme going, but, you know, it's not as if they're all great. It's, you know, the networks are still very broad, and some of the shows will maybe end up being good, even if they can or cannot find an audience. But it's often very hard to tell just from the first episodes that, you know, that I've seen. So I would say that if there's any theme at all of this year, it's basically that there's certainly sort of led by ABC, which is is trying to capitalize on the success of Shonda Rhimes' show Scandal, which has been this huge phenomenon in buzz and increased ratings, sort of in contravention of all other TV trends, has a very, very diverse slate of shows coming out. They have How to Get Away with Murder, which starts Viola Davis and is from Shonda Rhimes. It's produced by her. They have this comedy Blackish, which is about an African-American family. They have a comedy Cristela, which is about a Hispanic woman. They have a show coming out in mid-season called Fresh Off the Boat, which is about an Asian-American family. And they're really conscientiously sort of saying, we want to make shows for everybody who look, you know, people who look like everything, who look like America. And that is both, you know, a happy development, and it is also totally a capitalistic. They see an opportunity, and just that Scandal has sort of paved the way for, and they're going to see if they can capitalize on it.
Welcome to America. let's taste a little bit of that. You mentioned Blackish. This is ABC's comedy Blackish. Of course, Shonda Rhimes at ABC, super producer, African-American, who's brought in lots of new shows and is being given credit for this more diverse lineup this fall. Premieres Wednesday. This is September 24th. And here's a little clip. You got Andre, the father in the family, played by Anthony Anderson, and he worries that his affluent suburban black family is assimilating too much into their mostly white community, particularly after his son, played here by Marcus Scribner, tells him about a new plan.
I want to have a bar mitzvah.
Oh.
And before you say anything, I know we're not Jewish, but Zach knows a rabbi who's great at pushing through conversion, so.
Hold on. So you'd be willing to forsake your own religion to have a party?
Short answer, yes.
Are you listening to this?
And, Dad, now that I think about it, if I do, you won't have to worry about anyone calling me Andy anymore, because when I convert, I'll get a Hebrew name. I'm going to go with either Shlomo or Shmuel.
Oh, and a little bit more here from Blackish. Andre, again, struggling to maintain his family's black cultural identity in a mostly white community.
As a black man with all this success, sometimes I feel like an oddity.
If you look to your left, you'll see the mythical and majestic Black family.
Lately, I feel in order to make it, we've all dropped a little of our culture.
Melanie McFarland, okay, I get it. I can see I'd be funny, but up against Ferguson, it feels a little weird right now to me.
Well, I think that anytime that you have a pilot, it's an establishing point. One of the things that the producers have said is that they want to make this a much more relatable Cosby-esque kind of comedy, which is to say it's the struggles will be universal going forward. That said, you know,
the
like
struggles.
We
I mean, this
about.
Is quite a upper class family here in a very affluent
no,
white
I mean,
suburb.
Well,
struggles.
Look, you're also speaking right now to an African American woman who grew up in an upper middle class family. So yes, there actually are some struggles with that in terms of just cultural identity and
yes, that part I get.
The culture
I get
at large. So. So I think what they are talking about is just in general, just maintaining a sense of connecting to family lineage, mm-hmm. also culture in this whole idea of growing up in the dominant culture where there's a lot of just emphasis on not just assimilation, but also materialism and certain kind of aspects of these signs of making it that might seem like they're pulling away from their culture. Now, there's a lot in the pilot that establishes that. Mm-hmm. And I think that any pilot is going to have, you know, you're laying out what the series, the main concept is about. But from what the producers were saying was that they really, one of the things they want to do is essentially take that from that point and make it more relatable, which could honestly, you know, could be the death of the series if they try and water it down too much. But it's going to be an interesting series to watch as it goes forward.
I mean, in all this, is relatable to whom, right? So is that a thumbs up as a prospect from your corner, Melanie, for Blackish?
I actually am very much looking forward to seeing this series. And full disclosure, one of the reasons is because this is, you know, if you talk to people who have grown up and looked at this, a lot of the struggles, there's a lot of head nodding when
it's kind of your
some
story.
Of these. Some yeah, it's telling that story, you know. And then again, the challenge is to kind of go back and do exactly what Bill Cosby did, which is make that humor relatable to a broad audience.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're looking at television's new fall TV offerings this hour. What TV is becoming in the age of Hulu and Netflix and all the rest with Melanie McFarland of IMDb. She's TV editor there. TV critic for Slate, Willa Paskin, joins us from New York. October 10th, ABC premieres the new sitcom Cristela, created by comedienne Cristela Alonso, who plays a Mexican-American law school graduate. Here's a scene where she argues with her mother, Natalia, played by Terry Hoyos.
Cristela, somebody could have been a doctor two times in the time it's taken you to not become a lawyer.
Wow, that is so Catholic that even the Pope would be like, calmate, too heavy.
They're from Cristela. Willa Paskin, what about this one? Hispanic at the heart of it? What do you say, Cristela?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Cristela, unlike Blackish, is a multi-camera sitcom with a laugh track, so it feels much more old-fashioned. And I'm sure that there are some people that will be turned off by that. There's some very hammy, sort of broad jokes. But I think in that show, there are also some jokes that are much, much better than they have any right to be. There's a sequence where Cristela she's a law student, and she goes to an office. She's applying to be an intern or, you know, a summer associate, basically. And a white woman mistakes her first for the cleaning lady and then for the parking validator. And she says, you know, can you validate my parking ticket? And Cristela looks at her and says, you've been validated enough, you know? And it's a very, it's a very good joke. It's funny, it's sharp. And there's things about the show that I think it does very well in this sort of old-fashioned format. And the thing about all of these shows that's kind of great is that they're about something. I mean, so often pilots are so silly and they're sort of establishing, you know, the romantic lives of affluent people, and you know, they can work or they cannot work, but since comedies so often are about the chemistry of the cast, they usually don't. They maybe look promising. Mm-hmm. But these shows really have some ideas in them, you know, and you mentioned Ferguson and Blackish, and the thing about that is it is really dealing with race. It is about race explicitly in a way that's really interesting and totally not discussed very often on television. So even if it's about a more affluent family, you know, that's fine. We need to talk about all these things in all these different ways. And it's not as if there's, you know, TV now and for the last decade or so, you know, the thing that's most missing from television almost are poor people or, you know, people who are not rich. That's sort of completely gone. The shows like Roseanne that are about working class families, it's kind of evaporated.
Melanie, how does the production schedule work? Is it possible that Black-ish would throw its arms around some aspects of the Ferguson story, which is burst up so large? Would that be possible?
I find it very interesting that we're talking about the Ferguson story in terms of Black-ish. I don't know. In terms of the production schedule, in general, comedies are pretty far out. And many of these fall shows are probably within, you know, well within their season right now. It could be. Just in terms of, to echo what Willis said, they are talking about race, and there are all different kinds of experiences within every cultural community. So they might talk about Ferguson. I don't know. My guess is, you know, right now Larry Wilmore is helping usher the show into existence, and before him, he goes to take over his own show on Comedy Central. You know, it could very well be. But again, this is a show that's talking about race and all different kinds of experiences. When I keep on going back to the Cosby Show, but there are lots of issues in the 80s in terms of, you know, race relations in America that were coming up in the news, you know, just in terms of like even the birth of hip hop and all of those things coming up. So those were things that were sort of addressed on the show, you know, but I can't really see. I don't know. I don't know what the writers are doing in the room. We don't all talk to each other. So,
You know, I mean, look, TV can aim wherever it likes. I get that. The camera, there's many aspects of our society to write about and think about. But I am struck up against some of the big economic issues that Ferguson lit up as Willis says, at the sort of blanket of affluence that TV seems to throw over everything these days.
But it's not on Black-ish to be the show that has to break that.
Exactly.
No, absolutely not. But, you know, just saying.
On the other side, I would also say that it's been quite a while since you've seen a show that has an all African-American cast that is about a family that is kind of an upper middle class family that is so extremely in the middle of, like, in the upper echelons of management in terms of what Anthony Anderson's character does, and his wife is an anesthesiologist. You haven't seen, I can't recall seeing that just really in the forefront in a while, unless you're looking at a show like, say, right now you have The Divide that's on WE. But again, that's on WE. Yeah. So if you're looking at something that's, you know, just on a regular broadcast network, you know, this is an interesting kind of experiment. Will they talk about Ferguson? I can very much bet that at some point you're going to see one of the kids get a, you know, I'm just going to bet. But, you know, part of being a kid growing up in America, no matter where you are, is, you know, having some sort of confrontations with authority. And if you're a Black kid in the suburbs, my guess is one of those kids is going to have a confrontation with the police.
The other thing about Black-ish is it's very funny. Like, it's actually a very good pilot, independent of all of these ideas that it is about. I saw it for a pilot. You know, the cast is really charming, and there's a lot of ideas there, and there's some really good jokes. You know,
Tensions of assimilating and what you gain and what you lose when you assimilate.
But also sort of funny comedy.
Yep. Manny in Charleston, South Carolina. You're on with Melanie McFarland and Willa Paskin. What do you think, Manny?
Hello. You know, I've got to say that I think this Black-ish concept and idea and the commercials that I've seen, you know, are extremely offensive. I'm an African-American male. I'm 29 years old. And just the title, Black-ish, says that if this family wasn't affluent, then they'd be 100% Black without the ish.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So on its face, it's offensive because the only thing that defines Black people are the lack of affluency. And that's improper and racist on its face. Further, you know, one of the promos had the female mother character saying, if I'm not Black, someone needs to tell my hair and my behind that they're not Black, you know, that I'm not Black, meaning that, you know, the only thing that defines an African-American woman is having a large behind and thick hair, you know.
Hey, Manny, let us pick it up. Manny's seen the promos, and that's and you get his feedback there. You may have seen more. What do you say to Manny?
I mean, look, the way that a show is sold is the way it's sold. If Manny is offended by the way it's sold, I can't tell him whether to watch it or not. I can say that just in terms of dealing with the issues that he's talking about. I absolutely hear what he's saying. to respond to the whole thing about the biracial, about rainbow, and that's another thing, that, yes, there's a point, particularly
with... Oh, the
with,
mother's biracial, is that...
Yes, she's biracial.
In Blackish, okay.
Yes, and so there can be a point where someone who identifies with another culture besides being Black or any other ethnicity might be questioned as to how Black or Asian or Hispanic that person mm-hmm. might be. So, you know, that joke to me, I've laughed because I actually do have thick hair, and so I understood that, but I can also understand that from another side, if someone's offended by that, be saying that's the only thing that defines them. Well. Maybe, but it's, you know, there. I can't speak to how this show is sold. I can only say that when I saw a lot of things that were relatable. But, you know, again, it's a pilot, so something it might fall on its face in the second episode.
We shall see. I'm going to plunge on here. There's Blackish. There's a lot more to look at. Fox is coming out with Red Band Society, September 17th. It's a kind of dramedy, they're calling, about a group of teen patients living together in a hospital's pediatric ward run by Octavia Spencer as Nurse Jackson. Here, Leo, played by Charlie Rowe, comforts his friend Jordy, Nolan Sotillo, before an amputation.
Does it hurt?
It does hurt, but not the way you think it will.
I won't be me anymore.
Your body isn't you, your soul is you, and they can never cut into your soul.
Willa, a bunch of teenagers in a hospital ward? How's it work? Red Band Society.
Red Band Society is kind of like a Sundance movie. It has a very twee, sort of cheesy sensibility, like quirky, twee, in this sort of tragic setting. But all these people are very plucky, and they're going to be friends and survive or not survive. It's all narrated by a boy in a coma. I'm not a huge fan of it, if that description didn't explain
diverse
that.
Diverse cast, we're told, on that theme, for one point.
I mean, Octavia Spencer is in it. She's sort of been... In the sort of marketing, she's been one of the leading mm-hmm. actors in it. But she actually has a not huge part. I mean, she plays a nurse, a sort of stern but loving nurse. But the kids are really the main storyline in it. And there's a bunch of them, and it may be diverse. It's not hugely so. Mm-hmm. I watching it, wished she had a meatier part. But maybe it will get meatier.
Melanie, Red Band Society? What do you say?
I liked the pilot quite a bit, actually. I thought that it was a very, I can understand what Will is saying in terms of it being twee, but I also, I thought it was a very sweet pilot just in terms of how, you know, you could have taken something like this where it's all about a bunch of kids who are in long-term care in a hospital ward and made it really too super cutesy. And I really do think that they did a good job of humanizing those kids and making their story actually kind of interesting to watch and touching. Now, can that sustain that as they're going forward? That's always a question. Again, you know, this is one of those things, and Willa said this, we're looking at one episode, they're pilots. You could have a show that has a tremendous pilot and then falls on its face right afterwards.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
But I really, you know, I was one of the critics who actually really liked this series or this pilot.
Flashy name of this CW offering, Jane the Virgin, premieres October 13th. Here's a doctor gives Jane, played by Gina Rodriguez, and her mother, Andrea Navedo, some unexpected news.
You're pregnant.
I'm a virgin.
A virgin? We should talk in private.
Where did you get your degree from? The University of Dumbass? My daughter said that she is a freaking virgin, so do another damn test.
Pink means pregnant. Yeah.
But I've never had sex!
You are Immaculata!
What? No, Mom!
Jane the Virgin from CW. Okay, there's a, what, accidental insemination, I guess, here, you would say. And yes, she's both virgin and pregnant. Good, bad? What do you say, Melanie?
I was surprised at how much I like this one.
It's a funny
when premise. I first saw on the fall schedule that there was a show called Jane the Virgin, I was just like,
oh boy, roll your eyes.
And even the premise, it sounds absolutely ridiculous. What you have to realize is that this is a show that is playing up on the camp of the telenovela. Not as extremely campy as Ugly Betty was, but it definitely is. Her life becomes a telenovela. That's exactly what this inciting incident of her accidentally getting inseminated creates. the lead is wonderful. She's a great, she takes a situation that should be very absolutely ridiculous and turns it into something that is actually very heartfelt. And emotional, because again, we're talking a lot about identity here. Her identity is connected so much with doing the right thing and being the good girl, and not just saving herself from marriage, but moving forward in her life, in her career. She has all these dreams.
Yeah.
And so this whole idea just throws a wrench in all of that. And there's the main choice of her deciding whether to keep this child. There are some factors in there that she has to consider that I won't go into without spoiling it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other aspects even with her mother and her grandmother that, again, turn her entire story into a telenovela. And the structure of the series absolutely plays on that. And I thought it was charming.
Willa, Jane the Virgin, telenovela American style. What do you say?
Yeah, it's a lovely show. It's really cute. It has a very cheeky meta tone, but it works. The actress is totally lovely. And it's just very fun without being about nothing. It has a really nice, like, swingy pace. And, yeah, I mean, it's the best show the CW's had in a very long time. And it doesn't feel marketed totally towards, like, the CW has kind of focused in the past on, you know, on teens. Probably actually made shows that are marketed at people who like watching teens because it's a little provocative. Mm-hmm. But this is sort of a little bit more grown up. I mean, she's very young. She's 22 or something. Mm-hmm. But it's a really good show. It's really cute.
Fox coming out with a new drama series, Gotham, late September, based on the origin stories of Batman and the DC Comics supervillains like Penguin, Riddler, Catwoman. In the trailer for the show, lead character Detective James Gordon, played by Ben McKenzie, speaks with a young Bruce Wayne, played by David Mazouz, after the murder of his parents.
My name's James Gordon. I'm a detective. What's your name?
My name's Bruce Wayne. A man came out of the shadows.
There is something you can do now. You can be strong. However dark and scary the world might be right now, there will be light. There will be light. Bruce.
The voice of a boy, Bruce Wayne, there in Gotham. Mikkel in Stone Mountain, Georgia. You're on the air, Mikkel.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay, what do you think?
I think it's going to be an awesome show, man. I think it's going to change television, how we watch television primetime forever.
Gotham? Why? Why?
Why? Because you open a door. I mean, I remember the Detective Comics when I was a child, and, you know, starting, you know, a storyline at that beginning can open up a wide range of different, you know, stories and possibilities for this network.
Just so many stories to tell with all the origins of so many characters. Thanks, Mikkel. Willa, what about it? Gotham, lots of anticipation on this one.
Well, I'm totally charmed by Mikkel's enthusiasm. Yeah. I watched everyone was as excited about some TV shows as he is. But Gotham, interesting. You know, so I like superhero movies, fine. But I sort of have been skeptical about the decision to sort of bring them to TV. I thought that, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which ABC did last year and is sort of a slight spinoff of The Avengers, started like extremely, it was sort of an extremely moribund show. It was just sort of trying to repeat this thing that they do in movies in a way that's much better than TV, because so much of what superhero shows are about is sort of these, you know, explosions and adventures.
Yeah.
But Gotham surprised me. I wouldn't say that I loved it, but there's sort of two shows in one. There's a show with all of this mythology. So not only is it Bruce Wayne and Commissioner Gordon, you know, it's the Penguin, it's Cat,
yeah.
It's a, you know, there's all these characters and you see them. So that's like, that will be thrilling, I guess, for some people. But in a way, I was almost more intrigued by the sort of the bones of the show itself, which is this crime show in a city, Gotham, that's sort of like 70s era New York, where it's just like a disaster and they have to figure out how to clean up the corruption. And that was sort of more interesting to me than some of the superhero stuff.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at television's new fall TV offerings, looking at what TV is becoming in the age of Hulu and Netflix and All the Rest with Melanie McFarlane, TV editor at IMDb, joins us from Seattle with Willa Paskin, TV critic for Slate, with us from New York. Of course, a lot of shows will be returning, some after many, many seasons. I think The Simpsons is into season 26. The NBC crime drama, The Blacklist, returns later in September. Second season, James Spader plays the rogue agent Red Reddington, surrenders to the FBI, offers to help solve a case on the condition that he only works with rookie agent Elizabeth Keene, played by Megan Boone.
When our nation's security is threatened, the most unlikely man has all the answers.
You have to look at this differently.
How should I look at this?
Like a criminal.
Red.
I hate working with the man. He's dangerous, but everything we've done would have been possible if it weren't for him.
If you want to save lives and catch the bad guys, pay attention.
Blacklist comes back with James Spader. Love James Spader. Scott in Omaha, Nebraska. Scott, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. That was the point I wanted to bring up. There were so many Emmys won by so many established shows. The ladies you have on with you today, yeah. A show like The Blacklist, is it a pretender to the throne? Does it have enough plot line to carry on? I think James Spader is probably one of the best actors out there. And I was just curious to see what everybody else thought about it.
Yeah, great. I love James Spader. Scott, I appreciate your call from Omaha. Melanie, Willa, what about Blacklist coming back? And what returnees do you give high marks to in this season? Melanie? Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of The Blacklist. I'm specifically, as you said, a big fan of James Spader, and I do think that James Spader is the engine of that show. It's very clear they write to him. They give him these wonderfully written, delicious monologues, yeah. And he just takes them and then he just runs with them. And some of them are really quite beautiful. If you go back and look at, if you can see, there's a particular monologue and there's an episode called Angelo Garrick Part 1, where he kind of talks about these reasons that he wants to live. And I still think about that. In terms of the Emmys, who can say what the Emmys are going to do with The Blacklist? I do think that when you have a show like The Blacklist that is essentially a procedural, those tend to be overlooked by Emmys. Emmys in the drama department really seem to go for shows that have these very meaty through lines that are much more serialized. That doesn't mean that at some point James Spader won't get recognition. I could definitely see that happening down the line. But yeah, it's one of my favorites. It's one of the ones that I'm definitely looking forward to returning in the fall.
Willa, what do you like in returning shows? What seems on a roll to you promising for the fall?
I guess the show that I'm most looking forward to from coming back on the networks is CBS's The Good Wife, which is this – it's sort of a procedural about a bunch of lawyers, but it has a lot – it's very complex. It has a lot of other long-term stories. It stars Julianna Margulies.
Yeah,
and it just
terrific,
had a, came
intense.
Off a – Yeah, and it came off a great last season in which this is sort of a spoiler, but it killed off a very major character. And it did it in the middle of the season. So they had a number of episodes kind of showing us that the show was going to be able to succeed going forward. But they set up all this really meaty, juicy stuff. And it's just really well written and so smart. It's sort of so much smarter than other procedurals, even with, you know, the not excluding all of the sort of long-term stories. Their cases of the week are just so much more interesting. They're so much more interested in sort of technology and what's actually happening now in a way that, you know, a lot of procedurals you kind of if you've watched a lot of them, sometimes a murder will happen and you'll basically know how it's going to go because you've seen more of them before. And it's just a lot more clever. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to do next season.
A different kind of legal thriller coming from ABC. This is a late September premiering How to Get Away with Murder. Another from executive producer Shonda Rhimes stars Viola Davis as the brilliant professor Annalise Keating. She teaches an introductory college criminal law class.
Good morning. I don't know what terrible things you've done in your life up to this point, but clearly your karma is out of balance to get assigned to my class. I'm Professor Annalise Keating, and this is Criminal Law 100, or as I prefer to call it,
How to Get Away with Murder.
Viola Davis, right up front there. Melanie McFarlane, why do they call it How to Get Away with Murder? What's it mean?
Well, she is a criminal law professor, and she's also a practicing criminal defense attorney. And the main thing that she teaches in her classes are to look at all these little details and figure out exactly what one can do when one is defending a client to make sure that one wins. The thing that's really interesting about this character is that when I was watching the pilot, I was never quite sure if there was ever a point where she was being honest. And that's one of the things that kind of makes this character, this series really interesting. And without giving too much away, it's called How to Get Away with Murder. And one of the first things you find out is, yes, there is a murder that through the season will be drawn out. And there's aspects of this that are told in flashback. We actually do join at least part of the series in medias res. So you're going to go in and see something that has happened, and that some people that she is closely associated to, how they're dealing with it, and how they're actually going to try and look at the title.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that's really interesting about How to Get Away with Murder is its placement on Thursday nights. I mean, we talk a lot about Shonda Rhimes. She is the executive producer of ABC's Thursday night lineup, and I find it very interesting that here are three shows in that primetime lineup that go and kind of descend tonally into darkness. You have Grey's Anatomy, which is very, an ensemble cast, very romantic, very heavy issues addressed there. But these are all folks you kind of wouldn't mind having a beer with. And then you go into Scandal with Olivia Pope. And it's like, oh, wow, I wish I had her guts, but I don't want her life. And then How to Get Away with Murder. And I love Viola Davis's character, but I would not want to be near her at all. But I would if I was in a scrape. Would love to have her work for me. And then I wouldn't want to be near her at all.
Down and down it goes into darkness. Willa Paskin, how about Viola Davis on the small screen, Willa?
Well, you know, it's interesting about How to Get Away with Murder, because Viola Davis has talked about her decision to do television and just basically wanting to go where a really great character was. And to go with writers who she thought were going to take that character in interesting places. I have sort of faith that How to Get Away with Murder is going to get interesting, but I thought the pilot was extremely disappointing. And I say that as someone who really loves both Grey's Anatomy and Scandal, like still watches Grey's Anatomy in its millionth season.
Right.
And also knows that Scandal's early episodes were similarly, like, it took a while to figure out exactly what the show was. But, you know, the thing about How to Get Away with Murder is it's sort of this marriage of Shonda Rhimes's two other shows, which is it's set in a law school, and a huge part of the cast are all these law students who are working, who want to sort of impress Viola Davis, which is basically Grey's Anatomy 101. It's like a class of medical students, but here it's lawyers. They're working for this very harsh, stern woman who was also a character in the first in all of Grey's Anatomy, Dr. Bailey. And then we have this intimation that there's this whole season long murder arc, which, is going to be sort of scandalous and crazy. And that there is also in Viola Davis a character, similar to Olivia Pope, only in her willingness to sort of be unethical and deal in total black and whites and grays and just do all sorts of things that might alarm us, even as we are sort of impressed with her, as Melanie said. So I am looking forward to seeing what happens with the show. The pilot, as with all pilots, was a lot of setup and not maybe enough Viola Davis for me.
How to Get Away with Murder. We'll see where it goes. Ian in Burlington, Vermont. Ian, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm one of those people that doesn't really watch too much TV because I don't have cable or satellite. I get all my shows through streaming services like Hulu and Netflix.
Okay.
And I think HBO is really missing the boat on people like me because I can't watch Game of Thrones, but I would if I could.
You could pay for HBO.
But he only streams. He only streams.
But you could stream HBO. I mean, that's their argument.
Yep.
So there are hoops to jump through there. But my main point is I'm glad to see TV getting back to more episodic and serial television instead of reality shows, which were never reality to begin with. For instance, I never watched Survivor because it really didn't matter to me because the situations were contrived. And Dancing with the Stars, I've never seen it, though I would never watch it, ever, because I really don't care what celebrities do in ballroom dancing.
Ian, good luck with your streaming. And let me go to that. Do you agree with Ian, Willa, that TV is moving away from reality and talent shows and back toward episodic storytelling on balance?
Well, yes and no. You know, some of the shows that have sort of been the benchmarks for these networks for a long time, sort of specifically American Idol, for example, mm-hmm. That have been these huge ratings bonanzas for them for years and years and years, have sort of started to fritter out. So Idol does not do as well as it does. Neither do a lot of the shows that are similar to it. The Voice, you know, does well, but not as well as it maybe did or looked like it was going to. Dancing with the Stars does less well. The Bachelor does well, sort of depending on the season. But, you know, these shows are now, all of them are sort of in their 10th, 15th year, you know, 8th year, The Amazing Race, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think that there is a little fatigue that sets in. But I do, you know, and the sort of the newness and the frenzy surrounding reality shows many years ago has kind of worn off. And also there is just a huge, huge proliferation of reality shows on non-network. So, you know, a show like Duck Dynasty, which has also had its ratings ascend for a variety of reasons, you know, was this huge hit, and it wasn't on network TV, even though it was drawing in audiences network TV would love, love to have. Because those shows are cheaper to make, a lot of people are making them that aren't networks. It's just an easy way to get into the game. You know, but like this season, Fox has a new show called Utopia, in which they send a bunch of people off into the wilderness to build their own society, you know, that they're promoting heavily and could be really interesting. So I don't think that the networks are no longer interested in reality TV. It's just they're being a little more selective about the shows. They're not all huge hits. And it's sort of just it's everywhere now. And it's not just particular to them.
Robert in Georgetown, South Carolina. You're on, Robert.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Okay. I really think that a lot of the networks and cable networks really have Netflix and Hulu to thank for having what I consider to be higher quality programming now compared to you know, things that I consider to be garbage, like Duck Dynasty. And, you know, a few years ago you had Jersey Shore, which was a hit for some reason. Well, it's... people are finding, you know, alternatives to watching, you know, their favorite shows, you know, not having to sift through all the other garbage just to wait for, you know, say, you know, the next episode of, you know, what, NCIS or whatever it is people, you know, have time to watch these days. I myself, I largely stream. I don't have time to sit down and watch TV at night. So, you know, me, I binge watch my TV shows. You know, during the summer, I've watched back through Breaking Bad again. I caught up on Walking Dead, and I watched some of the Netflix shows, which were much higher in quality, I feel, than the shows on existing networks.
Robert, we'll pick that up. Let me hold the thought. And people's viewing patterns, which are very different these days, kind of wonderfully free. But on your point about Netflix quality, let me just play a little bit. This is Netflix released all 12 episodes of a new animated comedy. This is coming up in the fall season, called BoJack Horseman this month. It stars Will Arnett as a washed-up 90s sitcom star who also happens to be a horse. The show also features Aaron Paul and Allison Brie and Amy Sedaris, Paul F. Tompkins, Kristen Schaal. Here's a scene where the celebrity horse is recognized at a bar.
You'll never guess who's here. BoJack Horseman. He got a little fatter, but it's definitely him.
I thought maybe for one night I could go out to a bar and try to forget about myself. But no! And maybe because you're pretty, you're used to getting away with things. But you are a horrible person.
You think I'm pretty?
Okay, Netflix quality, Melanie, is this Exhibit A, or are they going
no.
the other direction?
No, I mean, look, if you're to go back to the previous point that that was made, I think that there have been Netflix in particular has really put out some interesting content. And yes, there are. I don't think this is it. I think if anything, BoJack is kind of taking what FX has done with Archer and Comedy Central has done with any number of their animated series and done their own version of it. Now, if you want to look at Orange is the New Black, that is the kind of show that I think Netflix is can take credit for in terms of pushing the envelope and perhaps influencing quality on a broader level. I'd say House of Cards, although it was based on a British series, would also fall into that category. And I will say that there are enormous opportunities that I think a lot of digital providers are beginning to really take advantage of. I mean, for instance, this fall, Amazon's going to have Transparent on, and Transparent is all about a family headed by the patriarch, who's played by Jeffrey Tambor. His name is Mort. And Mort is right now, he's trying to figure out how to tell his children that he wants to transition into a woman. You're not going to see, I'm guessing, anything on broadcasting cable about a man or a woman who is dealing with transgender issues or family. So that's something that's on digital, and that's going to be coming out in the fall. Now, with Netflix and Hulu, yes, they are definitely taking some series. I think Hulu is, it seems to me that Hulu is taking series that are either should be on network or were going to be, and presenting them. I think Netflix is much more about pushing the envelope there. And I think Amazon is doing it too.
Willa, what do you make of even Amazon in here now? Amazon, who owns Melanie's IMDb, Amazon in the TV game. What about the general drift? When you look at the fall lineup, look at all these players and new players, look at these very different viewing patterns. Are we headed toward a better quality product overall, Willa, or just treading water or backsliding?
Well, I mean, the idea that there's more and more television out there and there's more and more competition, I think we've seen that that has sort of upped the game for everybody. You know, the pressure from premium cable, from regular cable, has, I think, forced the networks in sometimes to make better shows. It's encouraged all these other outlets to try making shows. So I think ultimately this is good, but and we'll get great shows out of it. I think Amazon Transparent is a great example of that. That's like the show I'm most excited about for fall. But, you know, with all the good things, with huge bounty, there is always going to be some duds. And I think we can expect both great TV and terrible TV for many years to come.
Diversity in lots of directions, good, bad, all colors and all kinds of delivery platforms these days. Willa Paskin with Slate, you're terrific. Thank you so much for being with us today, Willa.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Melanie McFarland at IMDb, thank you so much. You're great, Melanie. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Happy viewing. This is On Point.